Case number 13-5200 et al. Primetime International Company Appellant versus United States Department of Agriculture and Thomas J. Vilsack, Secretary of Agriculture. Mr. Stock for the appellant, Ms. Foster for the appellees.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
And may it please the court, I'm Jerry Stock. I represent Primetime International Company, the appellant. Two statutory provisions are involved here, E1 and G3, I'll call them. It's 7 U.S.C. 518D, E1 and G3. Those provisions say different things, and they mean different things. That's just basic statutory construction. But the agency construes both of these provisions to mean the same thing, to support its per-stick allocation of the cigar assessment. The court already found in its prior decision that there is a way to read these two provisions so that neither one is superfluous. But USDA's interpretation...
That's not the way I read our original decision. I read the original decision as simply saying that the Agriculture Department's interpretation was not required by the plain language of the text, and it was sent back to the department, right, to issue a new regulation and exercise its Chevron 2 responsibility.
Your Honor, the holding in the prior decision was narrow, but the opinion of the court stated that there's a way to read these provisions.
Well, you just answered your question. The holding of the case was...
The holding was narrow, and it was sent back. But that doesn't mean that the agency was free to ignore what the court's opinion recognized.
Suppose I don't agree with that. What's your best argument?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Don't
agree. I said, suppose I don't agree with that. Suppose I think the department is free to exercise its Chevron 2 discretion at this point, that it's not controlled by our first decision. Then what is your best argument? That the agency's position is unreasonable?
Yes, it's not our position that the agency, that the, this case is controlled by the first decision.
Oh.
The determination was remanded to the agency.
Right.
But what the opinion said was that there was a, that two things. There was a statutory mandate that required allocation on a pro-rata basis according to volume, and that there was a way to read the two provisions so that one was not superfluous.
Let me try my question once more.
Yes, Your Honor.
If I don't agree with you that the result of this case is driven or influenced by the first case, what's your best argument?
Okay, there are several. One is it's a pure question of statutory interpretation. There's no agency expertise involved here. We're parsing the language of a statute. What do these two provisions mean? The agency doesn't even purport to advance a policy reason. There's no fact-finding.
You think there's no Chevron deference here?
I think this is not a Chevron Step 2 case.
And why is that?
Because there are two provisions in the statute. They both have to be given meaning if possible. The court recognized in its first decision that there was a way to give both provisions meaning so that one was not superfluous.
Isn't a statute that has two reasonable meanings precisely what Chevron 2 is all about? That's why we defer to agencies?
No.
No?
Well, where's the ambiguity here? What was remanded?
You just told me. I was just responding to your point. You said there's two different provisions that could mean different things.
And yes.
That sounds like Chevron 2 to me.
No. They both have to be given effect if possible. Mm-hmm. And the court has already recognized that there's a way to give effect to both so that one is not superfluous. The agency's per stick rule makes the E1 provision, the pro rata basis provision, superfluous. If that provision didn't exist, if it wasn't in the statute, the G3 provision, which mentions numbers of cigars explicitly, would support the per stick rule.
It doesn't say pro rata by weight. It just says pro rata.
It says pro rata based on gross domestic volume.
Yeah.
Volume.
Later in the statute, in G3, volume is designed for cigarettes as per stick.
Well, Congress can specify. First of all, this court already recognized in the first decision that the phrase in G3, which is, I believe, market share, is not the same as the phrase in E1. That was explicit in the first decision, that the phrase that contains volume in G3 is not the same as the phrase in NE1. But Congress can specify that a particular measure should be done in two different ways. They didn't do that in E1. There's a single word volume, and volume is should not be construed by the agency in two different ways when it's possible to give both both provisions meaning. So,
well, the statute itself defines volume in two different ways. In G3, it defines volume for cigarettes is by stick, volumes for everything else is by weight.
For purposes of...
Am I wrong about that?
For purposes of determining the volumes of domestic sales. Uh-huh. That's the phrase in G3. This court stated in its prior decision that that phrase is different than the phrase gross domestic volume, which is the phrase in E1. Okay? And E1 does not specify that volume should be measured in two different ways. Congress didn't make that decision in E1. And I submit to you, the agency is not free to define volume in two different ways when the word is the same volume, you know, in E1. But again, the agency's decision, the fundamental problem with the per-stick rule is that it makes E1 superfluous. If it didn't exist in the statute, G3 would still support it. And so this is a case where we cited the Village of Barrington test about how, or at least a statement about how Congress can confine the agency's discretion. This is a case where the agency can interpret these provisions in maybe myriad ways, or at least different ways. It doesn't have to be prime time's way, but they have to give effect to both provisions. By including two different provisions in the statute, Congress can find the agency's discretion, and both provisions have to be given meaning if possible. The court's already said it's possible to do that. You know, the big picture here, or one of the big pictures here, is that Congress had tobacco volumes in mind. Remember what the program is about. It's about subsidies to tobacco farmers subsidies to tobacco farmers to wean them off the growing of tobacco. And if you look at the front part of the statute, which is not involved in this case, but 518 A and B, those subsidies are based on volume. And, you know, I don't really think there's a dispute that the E1 provision, the pro rata basis provision, talks about pro rata basis according to or based on gross domestic volume. The dispute is whether, or one part of the dispute is whether the agency in that provision, in the E1 provision, can define volume in two different ways.
Let me ask you. We sent it back. The agency put out a notice request for comments. You, among others, or your client, among others, commented. And the agency spelled out its rationale for its conclusion and indicated why what you proposed created problems.
Yes.
Don't you have to show us how the agency was wrong in that regard, at least?
I don't believe so.
In other words, your argument here is step one, right?
Yes.
All right. That. And so the agency explained what its concerns were.
Yes.
And it gave you the opportunity to comment. You did. You came up with an alternative.
Yes.
And the agency explained why that alternative would not work in its view.
Well, yes. Explained some problems with it, yes. Not that it's not workable. It's certainly there's no claim here that it's not workable. They had some criticisms of it. The problem with that is this court has already said, or at least observed, that our construction, which was presented in the prior appeal and prior proceedings, was one way to read these two provisions so as not to make them superfluous. So there's at least one way to do it. It was sent back down for the agency to find out if there might be other ways to do it. The court didn't want to prescribe how the agency should do things. That wouldn't be appropriate after holding that it's not mandated
Precisely.
By the statute. Right. But they didn't do it. They came back with the same construction. It didn't give effect to both provisions before, and it doesn't give effect to both provisions now.
But, you know, in the first appeal, the only point was the agency said we were required by the language to do this.
Yes. And the court said that that was wrong.
And so we sent it back, and the agency examined it once again.
Yes.
And no longer took that position.
But the court also said that there was a way to give effect to both of these different provisions.
And the agency has explained...
Excuse me, the court said that. The court said that.
The agency has explained why it thinks it is. And you disagree with it.
The reason that they've explained it is that they say that both of these provisions mean the same thing. They both mean per stick rule. The court already said...
That's your interpretation of what the agency said.
I think that's a fair interpretation of what the agency said.
Well, it had two provisions of the statute.
Yes.
And it had a word in one, and it looked to the other section to define that word.
In two different ways.
But that's what this... Well, we've been over this.
One word should not be construed in two different ways. Congress can do it. They did it in G3. I'll acknowledge that. I'm not going to deny that. But in E1, they were... You know, every other class of tobacco product here is subject to an allocation at the Step B level that is... roughly proportionate. I mean, it's not perfectly proportionate to every flake of tobacco.
Congress adopted a special rule, and that's what the agency's relying on here.
But the court said they can't rely on that if it's in terms of a mandate the first time. Okay?
Step one. Okay. Didn't say it couldn't do it at step two.
So the agency is free at step two to interpret a provision that the court has said can be given a different meaning and not made superfluous in a way that does make it superfluous.
The question is, do we agree with your conclusion, isn't it?
I don't think it can be disputed that the per stick rule makes E1 superfluous. If it didn't exist, take it out of the statute. Tear it out. The G3 provision would support the per stick rule.
The district court didn't agree with your conclusion.
Excuse me?
The district court did not agree with your conclusion.
Well, the district court tried to harmonize these two provisions the same way the agency has tried to harmonize these two provisions. General, specific, and so forth. But the district court's decision at its core doesn't mention E1, doesn't really come to grips with the E1 pro rata basis provision. The district court decision in that section of it talks about E2, okay, which is not the key provision at issue here, and says that, well, the agency has given some meaning to E2 by saying that it doesn't allow the agency to pass orphan shares on to other. That's not the problem here. The problem is that E1 has to be given a separate meaning, or it should be given a separate meaning if possible. And again, we believe that it is possible to do that. The court believed that it was possible to do that, and the agency hasn't done that. Mm-hmm. The final interpretation, back to Judge Tatel's question about what if the court disagrees on step one, is... It's not a rule. There wasn't a real rulemaking here. It was never published in the Federal Register. It was, issued 2 days before the government's summary judgment response.
You have a case for the proposition that only regulations published in the Federal Register are entitled to Chevron deference?
No. Well, the regulation is in the Code of Federal Regulations, Your Honor. Not a preamble, but a postamble. And, it's the agency speaking, and it's entitled, I guess, to something, but it's not. The district court relied heavily, several times mentioning, maybe a half a dozen times, notice and comment rulemaking. And the point I'm coming around to is that there was no notice and comment rulemaking here. There was no rule that was made. There was an agency decision of some sort in the course of an agency proceeding. The 7-6 issue, the complaint that the agency makes and the government makes that Primetime's proposal in effect creates 7 subcategories where the statute only speaks about 6. What I have to say about that is that the court should give effect to what's in the statute, pay more, at least more attention to what's in the statute, i.e. the E1 provision, than unenacted unenacted statutes by Congress, which are unreliable, certainly at step one, and even at step two should only be used. Unenacted legislative history should only be used to construe ambiguous provisions. And
are you denying that your proposal would create seven categories?
Yes, it doesn't. They remember, the agency...
You call them subcategories.
Well, the agency subdivides cigars at step A. They do it the same way we do it. They use the same data. It's because of the data that's available. When they create the sub A allocation, the agency does, it subdivides cigars, it then uses the tax data, and then it puts them back together. That's what we do at step B. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't think that creates seven categories at step B any more than the agency has created seven categories at step A. But I'll reserve the balance of my time. Thank you.
Ms. Foster?
May it please the Court, Sydney Foster for the government. Your Honors, the District Court correctly concluded that the agency's use of the per stick method is based on a permissible interpretation of the statute. The agency fully explained how its interpretation is consistent with all provisions in the statute, including subsection E1. And as the agency fully explained in its decision, there are significant interpretive difficulties created if it were to adopt instead Primetime's proposed approach. And so the agency reasonably concluded that its approach was the better interpretation of the statute, and that conclusion is entitled to deference under Chevron Step 2. I'm happy to discuss any questions that the court might have, but if the court doesn't have any questions, I think the issues are laid out fairly clearly in our brief.
All right, thank you. All right. Do you have anything you want to say? She didn't say, but you don't have any time remaining. Do you have anything in reply?
If the court has further questions, again, we don't believe this is a Chevron Step 2 case. The E1 provision of the statute, which the court had recognized as a statutory mandate, should be given effect at Step 1.
All right, thank you.